Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
October 2020 was a different time in Southern California. The Dodgers won the World Series. The state of California began relaxing some COVID restrictions on businesses, bringing welcome updates like this one from LA's ABC7.
Studio 18 Nail Bar in Tustin prepared to reopen Wednesday.
My first thought was of relief and happiness.
The state giving approval.
In Los Angeles County specifically, the rules around small private gatherings were loosened up a bit. CBS 2 reported county health officials were cautiously moving forward.
More schools and businesses will soon reopen in L.A. County, but Health Director Barbara Ferrer emphasized it's still important to be vigilant against the virus so we don't end up with another surge in cases.
Just have to look around the country to note how hard we all have to work to just not get ourselves into a lot of trouble.
Around that time, Valerie Ewald, a clinical nurse at UCLA Santa Monica Medical Center, dared to hope that case numbers might be stabilizing.
We have a dashboard that I can look at the number of COVID patients within the system. And I think there was, like in October, there might have been only 10 or so patients between the two UCLA hospitals. And then it just dramatically started going up and up.
Officials tightened restrictions again around Thanksgiving. But the damage was done. L.A. County had gotten into the trouble Public Health Director Barbara Ferrer had warned about. Cases have soared 1,000% since November. Valerie Ewald says COVID is crushing her hospital.
It was early December that we're like, oh, we are deep in it again. They just kept coming and multiplying more and more.
So what does more and more COVID cases mean in L.A. County, the nation's most populous county of 10 million people? Well, on January 3rd, Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti, appearing on CBS's Face the Nation, shared this chilling statistic.
We're seeing a person every 6 seconds contract COVID-19 here in Los Angeles County.
A new COVID case every 6 seconds. That means 10 new cases in the next minute. 600 cases by the end of the hour. 14,400 cases across a day and a night. In fact, on Saturday, LA County became the first county in the nation to record 1 million COVID cases since the start of the pandemic. Mayor Garcetti pressed another disturbing point. That 30% of deaths in LA County have happened recently from the beginning of December.
The fatalities now are not just people with pre-existing conditions. 92% of previous deaths were people who had an underlying condition. That is rapidly falling. So my message to everybody is this is not only going to come for somebody that you love, this is going to possibly come for you. And so everything we do is either life-saving or life-taking at this point.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point, and today we're going to explore how LA County got to this point, if and how the county can slow this devastating COVID surge, and what lessons the rest of the United States must learn from what Southern California is experiencing now.
I'll tell you, this surge, with it being more than we've ever had, the stress that we're all experiencing right now is pretty up there.
So what does now look like inside a Southern California hospital? Valerie Ewald has worked as a clinical nurse at UCLA Santa Monica Medical Center for nearly 20 years. She described to us what it's like trying to save lives as the number of COVID cases keeps rising while the number of available ICU beds keeps falling.
You just always are wondering how it's going to be. Am I going to walk into it and find out that we couldn't get enough staff for the shift and that we're going to be going over the California state racial law? Is the ER going to be hit with this surge of patients? And are there going to be codes throughout the hospital that we're not really sure how we're going to get to all of them? You've got someone on a ventilator with this breathing tube going down their throat, and then they got the central line that's so we could give all these specific medications. It's not just a little peripheral IV. So if it comes out, the person could bleed. So then they probably have a Foley catheter in, and then maybe they're big. So you get 5 or 6 people to come in so that you can turn them on their stomach. And although I have to give a shout out, we have this lift team. These guys are so great and they've come good at it. It's still, we're all gowned up. We go in, we make the plan, we turn them. And then this person's lying face down. And meanwhile, you can't quite see where all their invasive devices are coming out of. So you still go in every hour to check on them, make sure that the lines aren't becoming tangled up, that they're not becoming occluded. Meanwhile, their blood pressure might plummet. If you're outside the room or, you know, other patient's room, you're constantly hoping that someone else is listening for the other patient so you can get there in time. There was one time I was taking care of a COVID patient who, she was not on a ventilator, but she had a little bit of paralysis. So I had to feed her. And I don't mind doing that, but it's like, it's hard to be in a room wearing all your PPE gear for a long period of time, carefully feeding someone, making sure they don't choke. And meanwhile, I could tell that the alarm was going off. So then you put down what you're doing in the run room. You have to make sure you take off your PPE carefully. Otherwise, you can infect yourself. Go outside the room. You've got to clean off your shield before you put it back on to go in the other room. So it just, everything is time consuming. It's a lot more time consuming than it ever was before. Families have called, and I don't blame them. They always want to, you know, explain their situation. Oh, but I really need to see my mother or my father or my sister. You know, can you work with me? And then I have to explain to them our policies on why it's not safe right now to have visitors. And then, of course, they try to argue their situation, and I don't blame them. I don't want to be like a lawyer who's just trying to win the argument because it's heartbreaking. Like, we know that when a patient might be dying and maybe they have several children who all want to come in, and we can only limit to maybe 2 to come in just for a couple hours to say goodbye to their loved one. It's so hard. I'm proud of what I do, and we're proud, you know, to be helping us get through this pandemic, but I just can't stress enough how different this is than it's ever been. I mean, I feel like a broken record. I'm sure that over and over you keep hearing nurses saying, and not just nurses, all healthcare professionals, it's real. It's real. If you can just hold on, just hold on.
Valerie Ewald. She's a clinical nurse at UCLA Santa Monica Medical Center and a representative with the California Nurses Association. Well, let's turn now to Dr. Elaine Batchelor. She is CEO of Martin Luther King Jr. Community Hospital in South Los Angeles. Dr. Batchelor, welcome to On Point.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
At this moment, how many hospital beds are available at Martin Luther King Jr. Community Hospital?
So officially, we have no beds available. We are in 131-bed hospital, and we have approximately 200 inpatients in the hospital right now.
No beds. So then for patients who continue to come to the hospital, how are they being treated?
So when beds in the hospital are not available, patients are held in the emergency department until a bed opens up.
Do you have temporary facilities that you've had to erect as well?
We have put up 5 tents outside of the hospital. These are medical grade tents that we're using for triage and treatment of our emergency department patients. We've added beds to the hospital. We have doubled up single rooms. We have patient gurneys in hallways in the emergency department. We have converted the emergency department waiting room into patient treatment space. And we've put patients in the old gift shop and in the chapel. So we've put patients in every conceivable space inside the hospital. And my staff has done a magnificent job of accommodating the increase in patient need. Mm.
Have you ever seen anything like this in your career?
No, I can't say that I have. This is definitely a bigger challenge than any of us who are working in healthcare right now have seen in our careers.
I understand that just before Christmas or right around Christmas Eve, you sent a letter to California Governor Gavin Newsom. What did you want him to know?
I was motivated to send the letter by the surge of patients that we were seeing in South LA. And I had also looked at data that the National Health and Human Services had started to publish online, showing the number of COVID patients in every hospital. And I was surprised to see that our small hospital in Southern California had more COVID patients than some hospitals that were 3 to 4 times larger. We were managing and coping, but our resources were very strained, and I wanted the governor to know what the situation was like at our hospital, and I also wanted to make an appeal for assistance.
Did he respond?
Almost immediately. So on the day after Christmas, he sent a group of leaders from Sacramento, from his office, from the Department of Public Health, from the Emergency Services Agency. They were accompanied by their counterparts from Los Angeles County. They came to our hospital. It was in the evening, the day after Christmas, and they met with my leadership team. They toured the hospital. We showed them all of the patient care areas. They were very impressed by what we'd done to expand our capacity, and they asked us what they could do to help.
Hmm. Well, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll talk about why this is happening in L.A. County, this massive surge. California overall is closing in on 3 million COVID cases, 1 million of them in L.A. County alone. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we are talking about the ongoing massive COVID surge in L.A. County in Southern California. L.A. County this weekend became the first county in the United States to record 1 million COVID cases since the beginning of the pandemic. And I'm joined today by Dr. Elaine Batchelor. She's CEO of Martin Luther King Jr. Community Hospital in South Los Angeles. And Dr. Batchelor, I'm going to want to spend some time here trying to understand what's behind the particular severity of the surge going on in LA County right now. I mean, what are your thoughts? What do you attribute the surge to?
Well, I can tell you what's been going on in our community, and I think it is connected to the surge. So my hospital's located in South LA. We serve the communities of Watts and Compton. It's a low-income community where almost all the residents are African-American and Latino, and it's been hit particularly hard by COVID. There are a number of reasons why our community has been hit so hard. Number one, this is where the essential workers live. These are the people that continue to work and continue to be exposed on the job. They're the people that stock the stores, drive the buses, and clean up after the rest of us. And they're getting COVID in very high numbers. They also live in more crowded housing. Los Angeles has some very crowded housing. And when one member of the family gets infected, it's difficult for them to isolate, and they're likely to infect the rest of the family. So we're seeing entire families coming in with COVID. And then finally, this community has what I call an epidemic of poorly treated chronic illness. These are diseases like diabetes that is three times more prevalent in South LA than in the rest of the state. And these conditions make them more vulnerable to the serious complications of COVID. So we see African American and Latinos being admitted to the hospital and dying at 2 to 3 times the rate of others.
Well, on that last point, Dr. Batchelor, a little earlier in the show, you heard that that clip we played from Mayor Eric Garcetti when he was on CBS's Face the Nation a couple of days ago. And in that interview, he had said that across L.A. County, that the number of deaths of people who had pre-existing conditions as well is actually, or, so the percentage of deaths of people with pre-existing conditions is actually falling. So they're seeing sort of more conventionally healthier people die due to COVID. Are you seeing that as well in your community?
I think we're seeing both, okay. Unfortunately. And I think as the pandemic has progressed, we've been seeing younger people who tend to be healthier succumbing to COVID as well.
I see. Well, so essential workers, crowded housing, underlying health disparities and health inequities. These are things that we've all heard and have finally, as a nation, begun to discuss for the past virtually almost year now. In addition, so I'm not underplaying it. I want to hear more about those factors from you, Dr. Batchelor. But in addition, there also seems to be discussion in California and particularly LA County about whether there is adequate access to healthcare, especially now in the middle of the pandemic. So last week, we actually spoke with Shanita Anderson. She's an emergency room nurse at Olympia Medical Center in Mid-Wilshire, Los Angeles. And last month, she and her colleagues were told that Olympia Medical Center will be closing its doors.
So they posted a notice in the break room on December 31st, 2020. And it basically read like, due to major renovations, we're going to voluntarily suspend services on March 31st, 2021. And this is going to relieve 450 full-time and part-time employees of their jobs. That's it. And so it was just like, what is happening?
So the job losses are one thing, but Shanita is also extremely worried about the community that depends on the Olympia Medical Center's services. And that community is primarily Black and Latino.
One of the major issues that I always stress as a nurse is that we are advocates for our patients. And so when we have patients that have a particular need and there's a particular demand and we're servicing that demand, you know, how could we possibly during this time period allow ourselves to be completely relieved of the resources to help these vital communities? And I was deeply saddened by it.
That's Shanita Anderson, an emergency room nurse at Olympia Medical Center in Los Angeles. Dr. Batchelor, is there an even more urgent lack or reduction of access to medical care in the very communities that need it the most in LA County right now?
Well, honestly, there's a chronic lack of access to medical care. So the community of South LA, where my hospital is located, has the lowest number of hospital beds per 100,000 people of any area in Los Angeles County. We also know that in our community, we are missing 1,200 physicians. That's 500 primary care physicians and 700 specialists. And the lack of hospital beds, the lack of physicians, is all related to what I call our separate and unequal healthcare system. We have a separate system of funding healthcare for low-income communities. It's called Medicaid. And in California, Medicaid pays providers very low rates, which makes it difficult to financially sustain healthcare services in low-income communities. And that leads to the problems with access that you just spoke about, and also problems with quality.
Now, when you say you're missing specialists and physician, you mean relative to other communities?
Correct.
Okay. Well, so those are all endemic issues in American healthcare that require smart and effective long-term solutions, which we will get to a little later in the show. But I also now want to spend some time understanding why L.A. County's attempts at controlling the pandemic through restrictions and lockdowns hasn't been all that effective. So let me now turn to Anne Ramoyne. She's a professor of epidemiology at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health and Infectious Disease Division of the Geffen School of Medicine and director of the Center for Global and Immigrant Health as well. Professor Ramoyne, welcome to you.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
So we've received a lot of questions from On Point listeners along the lines of one that this one from a listener who said that I read that L.A. had some of the strictest lockdown measures in the country. Why can 16,000 people go to a football game in Kansas City and yet L.A. is a mess? And by the way, that Kansas City reference, the Kansas City health director told the Kansas City Star last week that they have not traced any cases to exposure at sports games there in KC. But Professor Ramoyne, let me just start with your sort of big picture take in the using the words of this listener. Why is LA, quote unquote, such a mess?
Well, that's a very good question. But I think that the answers are many of the things that you've already just covered here in this broadcast. And that includes the fact that we are the most populous county in the nation, and not by a small margin. We are twice as large as any other county in the nation. This is by a very, very significant margin. You know, we also have, as you've already highlighted, we have so many essential workers and great disparity. We not only have large numbers of people, they're living in overcrowded housing, the multiple people in households, and this just provides opportunity for spread. I think that we're often looking for answers and trying to understand comparing one place to another place. But, you know, Los Angeles is a very, very complicated, it's a complex city with multiple populations. And so it's very, very hard to generalize, looking at some place in the middle of the country versus Los Angeles. We have a very different epidemiologic landscape here.
Okay, so with that point in mind, let's talk specifically, I mean, in as specific detail as we can about the path that LA County has traveled over, let's say, the past 6 or 7 months, right? Because we sort of put together a timeline here of lockdown restrictions that LA County both imposed and then relaxed from since roughly May, right? Because there was the shutdowns in the spring. And then starting, you say, around May 26th of last year, some in-person retail shopping was opened. Some non-essential offices were allowed to open. Then we had in June 11th, gyms and some film and music production allowed to reopen. Then June 18th, bars were reopened. But that quickly changed. 10 days later, things started closing down again, right? We have closing bars on June 28th, closing indoor dining on July 1st, gyms and malls then on July 14th. Then you go into the fall, right? And I think it's important to go through this. So listeners, just bear with me, because LA has been through some very, very strict lockdowns. You go into the fall and you have both some closures, and then October, things started reopening again. We have hair salons, card rooms, breweries, wineries, some shopping malls, some private gatherings, very limited private gatherings allowed in October 14th. And then comes Thanksgiving, okay, and things start getting shut down again. And by the time we hit the beginning of December, there's that stay-at-home order that has been issued in Los Angeles County. And the reason why I wanted to go through that, Professor Ramoyne, is it's not as if LA hasn't done things to try and get a hold on this virus. But I think a lot of people are wondering, well, What didn't work with these lockdowns and the removals of restrictions? What went wrong here?
Well, again, I think it comes down to, of course, we've had we have had a difficult run of it here in Los Angeles County, but it does come down to the fact that we do have a very large population, a large number of essential workers, overcrowding, and so when the virus is able to take hold and spread, it can spread more quickly under these circumstances. You know, it's very possible that there are a variety of reasons that we're seeing this. You know, it also could be possible that some of our early lockdowns were very, very effective, and so we may have had more people susceptible at a certain point, so the virus was able to take hold and spread more quickly. But I really do think that we have to consider the epidemiologic landscape and the populations that are here and the overcrowding, and I mean all of these things that we keep discussing. It's once this virus starts spreading and quickly, it's like a snowball. It just keeps gaining momentum and keeps going faster and faster. I think that we also have all of the things that we see everywhere else in the country. We have the pandemic fatigue. We have people having gatherings, et cetera, but those are the same things that we're seeing throughout the country. I don't think that that's different here mm-hmm. in Los Angeles versus other places. And so when you compare that to other places, the one thing that keeps standing out here is that we are the most populous county in the nation, and we have the issue of density, but not only just density, overcrowding. And when you have people living in small places with sharing rooms that can't get away from each other, they can't isolate appropriately, and a very large proportion of the population as essential workers, it's just the perfect storm. I think that those are the things that have been driving this pandemic here. And once the genie is out of the bottle, it's hard to put it back in.
Dr. Batchelor, did you want to add to that?
Yes, I think you got the timeline right, and the lockdowns did work for a while, because after the surge that we had in April and May, we had a bit of a lull over the summer, and it's really since Thanksgiving that it's come roaring back in this huge surge.
And so the significance of that being, it sounds like that family member to family member transmission is a major part of this story. Am I hearing you correctly on that?
Yes. And we see whole families coming in sick.
Yeah. Whole families. Wow. Well, so Professor Amoyin, the reason why I'm not trying to indict Los Angeles at all or officials in LA County, trying to learn here. So in looking back, given what you said about the genie being out of the bottle, but still looking back, is there anything that could have or you think should have been done differently, given that epidemiological landscape that you were talking about across LA County?
Well, I think that the Department of Health has been in a very precarious situation. You know, you have to consider the economy, and you have to consider the health of the population. And so there have been a patchwork of rules and regulations opening and closing. But I think that really better messaging and providing opportunities for people. I mean, what can you do? You can do things like you can find ways to help people quarantine better. You know, this is one of the things Dr. Batchelor has highlighted is how their entire families have become sick. Well, what happens when one essential worker comes home and doesn't have anywhere to quarantine? This is something that's very, very complicated for people. They live in small places, they can't quarantine, and then the entire family gets sick. And so finding ways for people who are sick to be able to quarantine away from their or isolate away from their families. And that could have made a large difference. But I think it always comes down to the same thing in public health, is that you have to have excellent public health messaging. You have to be able to work with communities and to be able to to really understand where the problems are and to be able to react quickly. And I think our public health system has been overwhelmed.
Well, Meghna, go ahead. Yes, go ahead, doctor.
Add, yes, I don't know to what extent this is part of the problem, but we've also had a shortage of COVID testing. And we would have patients coming into our emergency department with COVID symptoms. It was pretty clear to our physicians they had COVID. But particularly toward the early parts of the pandemic, we sent people home without testing because of the shortage of availability of testing and told them to quarantine. And I'm not sure it has the same impact if you're not having a positive test. We've also heard from our emergency room physicians that they will have people come in to the ED with classic symptoms of COVID, and they tell them they have COVID, and it's confirmed by a test, and they're shocked. So I do think there is an education component to
Dr. Batchelor,
well.
I'm going to just have to jump in here because we just have to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we are talking about COVID and Los Angeles County. Over the weekend, LA County became the first county in the United States to record 1 million COVID cases. And in fact, the county has been struggling for quite some time. For example, California has a blueprint for a safer economy. It's got four tiers in it, different colors of tiers that'll help communities figure out how and when to reopen. The purple tier is regarding county risk level is widespread risk. LA County has never left that purple or most widespread risk tier. I'm joined today by Dr. Elaine Batchelor, CEO of the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Hospital in South LA, and Anne Ramoyne joins us as well. She's a professor of epidemiology at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. And Professor Ramoyne and Dr. Batchelor, I wonder if you could just listen along with me to another Los Angeles County resident, because, of course, the pandemic is having an economic impact, too, on everyone in the United States, including in LA County. So we turn back to Sean Neeb, owner of Neeb Design Interiors and Flower Boy Project, a cafe and flower shop in Venice, California. Business at the cafe has dropped significantly, he says, but they are still open following safety protocols.
We have one gentleman in particular who's wheelchair bound and had a surfing accident. And it was just like someone who we just sort of passed all the time and always said hello, but now we were in this like moment of, hey, how are you? And taking the time to have a deeper connection.
So that's just one example that Neeb says about how the cafe has become a kind of comforting community hub. Even as the coronavirus spreads, touching his employees' lives, his family's life, and the neighborhood itself.
I mean, we are sort of like a ritual coffee shop where it's something you go to every day and you pick up flowers, and it's this sort of very neighborhood community. And I think people have been extremely supportive and happy to see almost like a staple that they've been able to come back to. Everyone has been very mindful of the regulations and cautious with the interactions with the people that are coming in and getting coffee and flowers. I do know that everyone is paying attention to everyone and is very supportive and checking in, especially because I think everyone knows someone who has COVID or is one degree away from someone who is going through COVID. There's another friend, employee who currently has it. He feels a bit like ashamed. It was interesting that he kept saying that he was sorry, and he did say that he didn't quite believe COVID. And I said that, how could you? I don't know how could you not? In hindsight now, sort of looking back, that he felt sort of foolish perhaps that he didn't believe, and that now he has it and he feels ashamed that he didn't fully understand the gravity of the pandemic and at how much we were all at risk. To bring it home, we had a babysitter. She's very much in the I don't believe, I believe this, I believe in QAnon, I believe in all of these things, and I don't believe in COVID. I've been struggling whether or not should Lori still come and watch the kids. But I don't want to not talk to Lori. She says, you know, Trump's still going to be in president. Don't worry about that. I said, okay, I'll make you a bet. And she said, well, you know, I don't have enough money to bet you. I said, okay, we'll bet a dollar. And that being said, Lori will call me and say, hey, how are the boys? Stock up on food. It's going to be rough. And I said, Lori, we're going to be fine. Are you okay? What we currently have now with the bars being closed and the restaurants being closed, it's the best thing that could happen. I don't see any other way forward. I mean, in the areas that are less affluent, there is a tremendous amount of street activity, vendors selling things on the side of the road, and still this sort of commerce happening. Because in the other neighborhoods that are more affluent and middle class and wealthy, you're not having that. And so, you know, we continue to have the less fortunate coming down with the virus. But I think most people can't see that like half of the population is completely isolated. And the other half of the population is trying to figure out how to get to some semblance of reality in their day-to-day life. And that's a problem. So how do you mitigate against that? How do you deal with that? You know, it's a mess.
Sean Neeb, owner of the Flower Boy Project in Venice, California. Professor Ramoyne, you heard what Sean said there at the end about how do you mitigate against the fact that you know, in his assessment, half of the people in LA are able to stay isolated and not have those close contacts. And the other half has feels like it still has to go out and have some kind of try, in his words, a semblance of a normal life. So how do you mitigate against that? Professor Ramoyne, are you there? Okay, we'll turn to Dr. Batchelor then. Do you have an answer to that question, Dr. Batchelor?
Well, at some point during the pandemic, as I was going out doing a little bit of grocery shopping myself, and observed that we had inconsistent enforcement of public health recommendations like masking. And I do think that one thing we could do is have stricter requirements for employers to protect their workers. Because we do know that people have continued to be exposed on the job and then take it home to the rest of the family. So that may be one thing that we could do is a better job of protecting our essential workers on the job.
Mm. You know, before the break, you had also said that some people are coming in to your hospital and they're getting a COVID diagnosis and they don't believe it. And we were diving right into the break. So you were saying that education is a big part of this, or better education. What did you mean by that?
Well, when you see people coming into the hospital with classic COVID symptoms and they express shock and disbelief when you tell them they have COVID, it seems like there's a disconnect there in the level of understanding in the community about the pandemic and about the vulnerability of everyone to getting COVID. So I do think that education is part of the need, that people really do need to understand what we're dealing with and how effective some of the protections can be, not just for ourselves, but for others in the community who have to continue working.
Mm-hmm. You know, I do wonder, to use Professor Amoyin's phrase from a little earlier, the genie is out of the bottle. Mayor Garcetti said that on average, there's a new COVID case every 6 seconds. Will it be possible, Dr. Batchelor, you think, to get this surge at least under control, to drive down the number of new positive cases?
We do expect to see that. And I think we are cautiously optimistic that there may be a bit of a plateauing right now. And I do think that the holidays drove some of the surge. But the real light at the end of the tunnel is the COVID vaccine. And if we can get that vaccine out and get it into people's arms, I think that is the path toward all of us getting out of this pandemic.
Have you been able to get vaccines for the workers at the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Hospital?
Yes, we have. We got our first allocation of the Pfizer vaccine right before Christmas, I think it was. And within the first few days, we had vaccinated over 500 members of our staff. Our staff are mostly people of color. Over 80-85% of my team is people of color. And they were thrilled to have access to the COVID vaccine. We want to model that behavior for the community. We want people in the community to know that the vaccine is safe and effective, the best way for us to protect ourselves, our community, and to end the pandemic.
Hmm. Mayor Eric Garcetti, though, has expressed some frustration about the slowness at vaccine delivery in Los Angeles. He has said that they're at a pace right now to deliver vaccines in Los Angeles over 5 years instead of over half a year to get enough people vaccinated. Do you feel that it's been too slow as well?
I think we need to do better. This is a tremendous undertaking to vaccinate our entire population. I also know that there hasn't been enough vaccine delivery, but I think that the city and the county are in the process of ramping up operations so that we can vaccinate a large number of people over a small period of time. Eventually, people will be able to go to a retail pharmacy and get a COVID vaccine. Dodger Stadium is being turned into a vaccination site. Disneyland in Orange County is going to be a vaccination site. I think, you know, we're in the process of ramping up now. And obviously, we need to go as quickly as we can.
Okay. Well, of course, state governors also have a major role to play here in terms of facilitating between the federal government and their states and then localities like L.A. County. So here's California Governor Gavin Newsom at a news conference at Dodger Stadium just on Friday. And as Dr. Batchelor noted, Dodger Stadium is now being used as a mass vaccination site.
We've got to increase the pace and distribution in the administration of these vaccines. The reality is we need to get these vaccines out of the freezer and we need to get them into people's arms. We need to make sure, as the president said, we need to do that with a lens of equity. Absolutely.
And do you, Dr. Batchelor, do you see that lens of equity as Governor Newsom is talking about? Do you see that lens being applied when it comes to vaccine distribution?
I think it's a little too early for us to know. I think that part of having that lens of equity is going to have to be intense education for all of our communities so that they can understand that the vaccine is safe and effective. Because if the vaccine is available but people are mistrustful, then we will see some communities lag behind others. I think so far we've seen good equity. So, for example, in my hospital, We started with all staff members who were patient-facing, whether they were doctors, nurses, environmental services, transporters, blood drawers. It didn't matter what their job was. If they had contact with patients, they went first. So I think that we can achieve equity, but I think we've got to do good education along the way.
I want to just take a step back here for a moment, because we have done so many hour-long discussions about COVID over the past 10 months. And one that we did in December of 2020 is jumping to mind now, about what Australia has done. And specifically, we talked about Melbourne, Australia. Now, I'm not comparing Melbourne, Australia as a one-to-one comparison to LA County. I'm not doing that. But I'm just thinking, like, they went through a lockdown, many months lockdown, that was, some people would call it extremely draconian, right? Where people were not allowed to leave their homes for 23 hours a day. And in addition, they paid people. They paid people to stay home so that folks wouldn't be forced to work just to get by. So there were things that can be done or that were done in other places that did really just sort of cut the knees out from underneath the pandemic. They were very effective. Do you think that those measures were ever a possibility in a place like LA County, Dr. Batchelor?
I think that you're pointing out through your comparison the difference between a society that has a very robust safety net and one that doesn't. And I think it is one of the reasons we need to do better as a country at weaving a more effective safety net and taking care of our most vulnerable citizens. I don't have any disagreement with that at all.
Well, we've just got about a minute and a half left to go, and I'm wondering what you would like the rest of the country to know right now about lessons that everyone else should learn from LA's experience, a very particularly challenging experience of this pandemic so far, Dr. Batchelor.
Well, I hope that what people learn is that we are all connected. We are all part of one community. And we need to do a better job of taking care of each other and taking care of the most vulnerable in our community. If our essential workers are still being exposed, if they don't have adequate access to healthcare, that's a problem for all of us. And we need to build a more effective system of caring for everyone in our country.
Well, Dr. Elaine Batchelor is CEO of Martin Luther King Jr. Community Hospital in South Los Angeles. Dr. Batchelor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And due to tech gremlins, we lost Professor Anne Ramoyne for most of that segment, but she's back now. Professor Ramoyne, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Our apologies for that, because I really wanted to hear more of what you had to say about getting the virus under control, but I just have enough time to say thank you now, though. So Professor Ramoyne, Professor of Epidemiology at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.